As no doubt of most of you are well aware, Nelson Mandela died yesterday at the age of 95. For the anti-apartheid leader, Michigan was a special place, and current state's Joe Lindstroth is here to tell us more. Hi, Joe.
Well, hello, Mark. That's right. Michigan really was a national leader in the anti-apartheid movement. It was the first state to divest from South Africa. The late Michigan Congressman Howard Wolpe led the national effort to impose sanctions on the white minority government, overcoming two vetoes by then-President Ronald Reagan. But Michigan's leadership in America's anti-apartheid movement actually began here at Michigan State University. MSU was the first university, first public university, to divest from South Africa. In 1979, the university sold $8.5 million worth of stock in 13 companies, and that wasn't without some backlash. There are some pretty powerful Michigan companies who did have investments in South Africa, GM, Ford, Dow Chemical among them. Earlier this morning, I spoke with Kurt Dewhurst. He's the director of Arts and Culture Initiatives here at MSU, and he led the university's collaboration with the Nelson Mandela Museum in South Africa, where he spent extensive time. He explained how the movement to divest in South Africa started on the MSU campus back in the late 70s.
With the leadership of a core group of faculty and staff and community members and governmental figures started to join what was an emerging set of sanctions to move toward putting some economic pressure on the apartheid government, and MSU Board of Trustees voted to divest of its stock interests and corporations working and having presence in South Africa. And then not too long after, in the next couple of years, they helped push through the state of Michigan doing the same thing. And Michigan became one of the first states in the United States also to add pressure and economic sanctions that really helped provide outside pressure on the apartheid government that continued to grow and eventually, of course, led to the end of apartheid in 1993.
Talk to me about some of the challenges this effort faced, both on campus at MSU and I think more broadly in the state of Michigan. There were some pretty big Michigan companies, Ford, GM, Dow Chemical, that had investments in South Africa. What sort of opposition did this movement face?
You know, I think for me, people who lived through that period of time, who were not aware of really what was going on in South Africa, they were surprised to see these kinds of actions happening. And in fact, figured that somehow that they really wouldn't have the impact that they did. And so, you know, it was a courageous step for the university, I think, to support the efforts for a democratic new South Africa, because the university clearly lost financial support from some of those corporations who questioned that decision. Over time, I think, as people look back on it, they knew that MSU was on the right side of this of history, and it was a wise thing to do and one for the state of Michigan. And, of course, in the end, we look back now and we celebrate the liberation struggle and the creation of a non-racial, free, democratic South Africa today.
On the national level, the late Michigan Representative Howard Wolpe co-authored legislation that imposed sanctions against South Africa in 1986, and he led two overrides of Ronald Reagan's vetoes of what became the Comprehensive Anti-Apartheid Act. How were Wolpe's efforts viewed by Nelson Mandela and the global anti-apartheid movement?
Well, I'm really happy you brought that up. Many people don't realize Howard Wolpe's influence, and he is very highly regarded in South Africa. It's always been interesting to me when I first started working there how many people remember the Wolpe name who are part of the liberation struggle. He was indeed a national leader, and the Wolpe family as a whole played a key role. And then local level that we think about in Michigan, other connections, Lynn Jondal, who was a local representative and, of course, a former candidate for governor, was also part of a group of individuals and political leaders that stepped forward and really made a difference both at the state and national level. So, I think there are significant connections. It's also, worth noting that, Michigan State has such a strong presence across the African continent, Many people are not aware that the African Studies Center at MSU is the largest in the U.S.
It's the largest, yeah.
Yeah, 190 faculty working on the African continent. And for many years, very strong ties in South Africa. And as a result of that, you know, today we have a variety of different connections and ties there. You know, we have through the MSU Museum, we have a formal partnership with the Nelson Mandela Museum, and a program that was started to honor Mr. Mandela is a MSU Museum, Mandela Museum Graduate Curatorial Fellowship that we have, I think it's 7 study abroad programs now in South Africa. Wow. MSU, over the years, has produced probably more PhDs of African students who come to study at Michigan State and return to their countries. And, of course, most recently, the MasterCard Scholars Program that's supporting undergraduate and graduate students to have experiences as earned degrees at Michigan State. So, which is, another example of the ongoing set of connections. And I think some people probably would say, well, Mr. Mandela has passed, some of these relationships may not continue, but I think quite the opposite. I think they will continue to grow his legacy that these all honor, and we have we'll ensure that there's a strong presence of MSU as well as with the many faculty members who work in South Africa who continue to do great work there.
How important was Michigan in the global anti-apartheid movement? Put it in perspective for us.
I think for many, those of us who live in Michigan or have connections certainly to MSU, I think we could take a real sense of pride in that. I think the strong connections with the civil rights movement in our state also had a way of connecting. I was working on an exhibition we did for Mr. Mandela's 90th birthday called Dear Mr. Mandela, Dear Mrs. Parks, all focusing on children's letters written to the two of them that we mounted at the National Museum in South Africa. And I was doing research and discovered the photographs and the documentation of when Mr. Mandela came to Detroit on his first U.S. tour. And I knew that in reading about his life that he had always talked about how he admired Rosa Parks. And there's this great image of him that was on the front page of Detroit newspapers at the time of him coming off the plane, and the first words out of his mouth is, "Where's Rosa Parks? I want to meet Rosa Parks." And of course she was there. And it's just an indication of his connection, even in prison, to the presence of people like Rosa Parks here in Michigan who he admired. And I know in his opening speech, he even referred to them. He had a great interest in Motown music that he followed while in prison. And he even quoted
Marvin Gaye.
Yeah.
The words go, quote, "Brother, brother, there's far too many of you dying."
There's some natural connections here with Michigan, and ones that I hope that we'll all take some time to give more thought to as we think about a man who was certainly one of the most important figures of the 20th century and what those lessons are for the 21st century as we look ahead.
In thinking about this, your business is history and preserving what was valuable in the past. Professor Dewhurst, what qualities do you feel Nelson Mandela had that we need to preserve and remember?
Well, you know, probably the thing that that strikes me, of course, is the path that he chose to take. You know, he really, as we all think about the 21st century, his ability to reach out and connect with people who you don't see the world in the same way with and get to know them and try to understand what their qualities are and where you can find common ground. I mean, he was a successful politician, I suppose you can argue, and skillful negotiator because he partially disarmed people of his sincere interest in getting to know them and trying to understand them and understand why they were different. But he didn't let that difference separate them. When he comes out of prison and then is elected president, what is the first thing you're focusing on is the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. Rather than revenge or vengeance guiding him, it was about unity. And I think one of the things he always sought was strength and unity. And he understood that that was necessary for South Africa, certainly economically, but also, I think, at the very base, human level, that he needed to bring people together. I think that Mr. Mandela clearly is somebody that we will continue to learn from, and his legacy will guide us, I hope, in the 21st century.
Kurt Dewhurst is Director of Arts and Culture Initiatives at MSU and a curator at the MSU Museum. He led the university's collaboration with the Nelson Mandela Museum in South Africa and has extensive experience working there. Thank you, Professor Dewhurst, for helping us remember Michigan's connection to Nelson Mandela.
Thank you. Nice to be with you this morning.